Music from Big Bad Voodoo Daddy playing the Mahawi on Friday, the 12th of this month. That is this Friday. And it's mahawi.org for more information. And that's the music we'll be hearing from Big Bad Voodoo Daddy throughout the panel this morning. Well, good morning, all. I hope you had a lovely weekend. If you took an extended weekend, I hope you had a great time. If you were with us on Friday and were back, then at least the normal part of the weekend was pleasurable as well. Hot. Very hot, but hopefully you could withstand that and either suffer through or find some relief from the very warm temperatures. We have a lot to discuss, of course, and we'll get to that in just a moment. Let me introduce our group to you, and we'll get started. We'll get started. Jennifer Burns is here, U Albany lecturer at Africana Studies. Good morning, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm great. Happy to be here. Good morning, everyone.
Well, we'll take care of that. Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences at RPI, Jim Henler. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, Joe. So the question I was faced with this morning coming in, big issue, is according to one National Day list, today is National Raspberry Day.
Yeah.
According to the other one, it's National Blueberry Day. So I think we should make sure that our listeners
let the berries
let
square
us know
off
which berry is
find
is
out
the right one.
And well,
be more interesting than some of the national news.
Jim Ketterer is a senior fellow and a Bard Center for Civic Engagement. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Really nice to have you with us. Real quick, I just want to make mention of this because this is a very cool thing. But the Arch Stanton Quartet is playing this Tuesday at the Lark Tavern from 7 to 9 as part of their weekly jazz series. And this is your group.
Yes.
You're the part of.
I play drums in this group. Thanks for the plug. This was not set up, but I appreciate that. Thank you.
453 Madison Avenue. And, we all know the Lark Tavern, of course. But we'll be playing in the back room, which has been renovated and looks great. And, good food, good music, a drink or two.
Yeah.
You're set.
Yeah. You know, they have a weekly jazz series at the Lark Tavern. And it's been great to see. I don't live too far away, and I stop by and support the cause. And it's just been great to see that people turn out and that there's regular support on a Tuesday night in Albany for music. So this Tuesday, I'm playing with the Arch Stanton Group. And I wonder how many of our listeners will know the origins of the name Arch Stanton. I'll leave it to the collective listener mind.
All right.
It's not anybody in the group.
And then, once you find out if they prefer blueberries or raspberries.
Yes, which they're going to throw at us when we're playing.
Well, it sounds like a great night. It's from 7 to 9 at Lark Tavern tomorrow night, so right here in Albany. And that sounds like a lot of fun.
Thanks, Joe.
It'd be a very, very good time. Libby Post is here, political consultant, lobbyist, and dear friend. Hello, how are you?
I'm good.
All right. So... What? Oh, didn't I say Jennifer?
Yeah, start.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Start with
okay.
It. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I thought I had gone.
Alphabetical. I'm so sorry.
That's right. Good morning, all. Welcome. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. So, I have to. I want to start today by asking if, just by going around the room and see where people are on the subject of President Biden and whether you believe, a fairly pointed question of whether you believe he should step aside or whether he should stay in the race. And I do this to not put you all on the spot, but just so that I know and the listeners know sort of where you're coming from. I think a lot of us have had a range of emotion and a range of thoughts over this on this over the last 10 days. And I just want to sort of get the mood of the room and find out where you're all coming from before we dig in and talk about where we are at this very moment. So, Libby, what do you think?
Well, I've said this before, and I'll say it again, and I'll say it forever until this whole thing is settled. If Biden is replaced on the ticket, the Democrats have to walk lockstep into the Democratic convention. This cannot be a brokered convention. It cannot be open for debate. They have to have a nominee, both presidential and vice presidential, and we all have to move forward together. The likelihood of that happening, given, what's going on in the world and the divergent opinions about foreign policy in our country within the Democratic Party, will make that very much less likely to happen. So ultimately, I say he stays on the ticket and we all work like hell to get him elected. I have put up a quote, put up a graphic on Facebook, and I will stand by this. Vote blue no matter who, vote red and democracy is dead. This is a stark contrast. What we really should be talking about is not Biden, but Project 2025 and what the Heritage Foundation is planning on doing. And the fact that Trump said, I don't know anything about this, is pure BS. He knows. He said he didn't know the Proud Boys. He said he didn't know anybody who, you know, stands by him and basically does his dirty work for him. So we need to be talking about not Joe Biden, but Project 2025 and what that means for our democracy. And what it means is it goes away. They want state-controlled media like TASS in the Soviet, well, the former Soviet Union in Russia. They want abortion to be totally outlawed. They want to turn the clock back on LGBT rights and gay marriage. They want to cut funding for veterans. I mean, they want to do some really, really horrible things. And there are a lot of people who've signed on to this.
All right.
So that's what we need to talk about, not whether or not Joe Biden is too old. We need to talk about what will happen if Trump gets elected.
Okay. Jennifer.
Okay. I, too, have the passion inside that Libby just demonstrated.
Thank you.
You know, the way I've been thinking about this is, first, the Democrats always have a problem with messaging, and this past week and a half has shown it even more. I understand fully the concerns about Biden's age. I understand and watched and was also taken aback by the debate and his performance. However, I disagree with a lot of the coverage since then about how he hasn't been out there, because he has been out there. He just hasn't been in places that people are demanding or want him to be, because he already has things that are set up and were in place. He has performed well for him since then, and I have continued to be a person who says we, many people, have had sort of an ableist and ageist expectation on Biden that I believe is extreme and unfair. And they're raising the bar on him while lowering and tolerating the bar on Trump. They've accepted Trump's behavior, his criminality, all of this chaos, the Project 25, all of the lies, as just, whatever it is, and then gone extra hard into the expectations on Biden. So I think that's unfair, and I think the Democrats are participating in that. And I do think that the media is also participating in it by covering this in a way where they're constantly criticizing his mental stability and asking for doctor's tests and saying he's in a bubble that's being protected, as if he's sort of naive and out of it, when he is holding meetings with all of these other leaders. So there's that. The other thing is, I am brave enough to value democracy in all of its ickiness at times, and brave enough to also cast a ballot that could lead to Kamala Harris being president, if that should be the case.
Jim?
Well, I'm going to take a little bit of a different point of view on this. First off, the debate was not the first sign that there were problems with Joe Biden. There were very clear warning signals coming, and there were people speaking out about it. James Carville, who got Bill Clinton elected. David Axelrod, who got Barack Obama elected. Ezra Klein, who I think is an incredibly brilliant columnist and podcaster. They were not only not listened to, they were shouted down. They were ridiculed. They were belittled by the people specifically around Biden. And this is part of what Olivia Nuzzi, in her great and recent article in New York Magazine, talks about. The title of the article says it all, The Conspiracy of Silence to Protect Joe Biden. And this is not just a question of, well, is the number a big number? Is he too old by way of the numbers? Is he up to not only running for office, is he up for running the country? He's the president of the United States right now as we speak. And I have to say that I think it's deeply disturbing when, and she's a serious reporter who has covered the White House for a long time, when you read in this article that's well reported that he's not remembering the names of longtime family friends, that he's having to be stage managed all the time by his wife, that in multiple appearances over the last few years, he appears to just be out of it, not connecting, not engaging, not remembering. And I think it calls into question, of course, can he beat Donald Trump? But aside from Donald Trump, where, by the way, it's not news that he's a problematic person. This has been, to anybody paying attention, since the 1970s. He's been a problematic person, and he continues to be, and that's an issue. But Joe Biden is the president of the United States right now, at this moment, where we face, as we always do, some of the most serious issues known to anyone. And to have to be able to bring it and say, like, well, can he kind of do it? Could he be good enough? Can he kind of, you know, get through the next election? No, I want to know, can he get through the next week? Can he actually execute the office? You know, I wish that George Stephanopoulos had asked some very pointed, complicated policy questions on things like nuclear policy. Joe Biden is the one human on the face of the planet who is in charge of the nuclear stockpile and of the United States. He decides. He's the one person who decides, do we launch, do we not launch? What is the policy, for instance, on our continued adherence to the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty? Do we test? Do we not test? No first use. Do we use first strike or not first strike? These are fair questions because he's in charge. He's been the president for several years. He should know this. And I think that we're lowering the bar way, way, way too much. We don't owe him anything. He's a public servant. He has to either demonstrate that he's up to the task or step out. Step out immediately.
Jim Henler. I was going to say, I
couldn't disagree more. And then the question is where to start. So I absolutely think he should stay in. I, too, have, you know, hung out down in the D.C. area, though these things. So first of all, the American people have this idea that the president has this ultimate power. Frankly, suffice to say that the nuclear protocol is not such. Yes, the president is the only person who can order a nuclear strike. That is not the same as executing a nuclear strike.
Okay, so we should have somebody who is diminished.
Second of all, the decision making around the White House, the way things work. Look at what he's achieved. You're saying we saw danger signs before. Yeah, we saw danger signs, like actually making an infrastructure act happening, like actually having one of the strongest economies we've had in a very long time, despite the intensity of what COVID did. The fact that he got us out of COVID. I mean, this man has done a stunning job in the past 4 years. And coming in 4 years ago, people were asking exactly these same questions. Will he be able to do the job? The answer is he proved he could do the job. And I don't see any reason to stop believing that he can do the job.
And he's not the only person in the Oval Office.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. Any good president, unlike Trump, who thought he could do it all, and everybody who worked for him just about said, see ya, You know, there are other people in the Oval Office, in the White House, in government that helps make those decisions. It's not like unlike Trump, he doesn't make these decisions in a vacuum. And I have to say, you know, Jim Ketterer, not Jim, Jim Henler, okay? And I hope you don't take offense at this, but if you do, I'm sorry. I think it's really easy for white straight men to say he should get out because you don't necessarily understand the impact for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender people, for women and control over our bodies, for people of color. The impact is going to be tremendous, and we all have to stay the course. We have to understand that a mid-course correction or changing, and he just came out, Biden, with a letter. It just hit the news. He's not getting out, okay? But it could be absolutely disastrous. And I just don't think that many people, especially white men, not just you, but I think a lot of white men who are straight and who are saying, oh, he should get out, and who are Democrats, he should get out, he should get out.
I think don't that's unfair. Quite,
well, I don't, I'm sorry.
But he's also,
I don't think, well, let me finish.
He's a loser. He's losing.
He's
losing.
We will know whether he wins or loses on November 7th, okay? It is early in the process. We're all wringing our hands.
I'm not wringing my hands.
People are wringing their hands and are wondering what's going to happen, what's going to happen. We have to all work and stop wringing our hands and get focused on making sure that Trump does not get reelected, because if he does, abortion will be illegal everywhere.
But
my marriage will be, I don't know, would they annul it? I don't know what the hell they would do to it. I mean, it would be a disaster.
We have to take a break, but we'll pick this up at exactly the same tenor.
Okay.
when we come back, right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Jennifer Burns, Jim Henler, Jim Ketterer, and Libby Post making up the panel. We welcome you. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. This letter from...
Joe, can I just answer Libby,
of
though,
course.
Before,
yes.
before we go on? So... I think, Libby, what you said is just setting up a dichotomy that I'm not presenting. I'm not saying that Joe Biden should get out so that Donald Trump can win. I'm actually saying he should get out because he's likely to lose, highly likely to lose, and getting becoming likelier to lose. I think that everyone should take a good close look at a document that's circulating around Washington. It's getting a lot of attention by Rosa Brooks and Ted Dintersmith. On what they call a blitz primary, that Biden steps aside from the campaign now, and that there are six candidates who will be who will come to the fore, will have this blitz primary running up to the Democratic National Convention. There will be public fora every week up until the convention. There will be voting at the convention, which will be extended by one day, and they're making the point that this is a positive thing. This injects life and dynamism into the race, and this is likely to get somebody who is a much stronger, more dynamic candidate than the one that we currently have. In terms of, like, well, how are decisions made in administrations? I know very well how they're made. I've worked there. But it's not to say, like, well, we ought to have somebody who's really not quite up to it, because that's okay, because there's other people in the room. Honestly, that does not cut it for me. When there are people who are available to be better at the task, including the current vice president, I think that that is just, again, setting the bar extremely low.
Also, there's just two things I want to enter into the equation, and then we'll go to the letters. This situation that we're in right now, I think anyone who has dealt with an elderly parent, grandparent, sibling, whatever, friend, that the situation can change so quickly. And I've been hearing in the media reports of people who are defending Biden who say, well, you know, I met with him in January and he seemed, you know, sharp as a tack. Anyone who has sort of been with an elderly person knows that that can change really quickly, mm-hmm. like within days, if not weeks, months. So I don't say that as a reason for him to get out, but I do ask the question of we're where we are now. Where are we going to be in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years if he is reelected? But I also think the larger question is what I think everyone is asking of the Democrats who are asking for him to withdraw is, can he win against Donald Trump? And I was really taken by the line in the interview by George Stephanopoulos on Friday night on ABC, where Stephanopoulos said, no president with a 36% approval rating has ever won re-election. And that's without the quote-unquote baggage that he has now. And finally, I just ask this question. If you put a pause right now and say this is the information that we have and that information isn't going to change, I probably agree with all of you.
That's a little scary since we agree with each other.
However, well, meaning I'm mixed. I don't know. Okay. I don't know. But if it goes on, Biden's being defiant. He's saying he's going to stay in the race. Great. What do you do in September? What do you do in September if there's a freeze? What do you do in October if there is an event? I this narrative that Joe falls down and gets back up again is a good narrative, and it is very emblematic of the life that he has led. But I think all of us know when it comes to age, that's one thing you can't push back on. And we're not talking about, mm-hmm. So that question about also that Stephanopoulos asked during the debate, do you think you're frail? I came out of that interview with a lot of just feeling of denial, a lot of denial from the president. But I don't know that how do you self-diagnose that? And I don't know how you ever would and why you would do it honestly. I think that would be really difficult to do.
I agree. I the interview I thought was sort of bogus. I mean, not to be mean to George Stephanopoulos, but I was just like, these questions, I mean, what is he supposed to say? Right? Yeah. Like, that was the thing. All of the questions were softballish. And I mean, is he going to say, like, yeah, I struggle? You know, I mean, like, it didn't per se do anything that really, I thought, calmed people's minds or, for me, made me think any worse. It just was sort of a wasted half hour. if that says, I just was sort of like, okay, George, that seemed a little lame.
But I think it's part of the problem, too, is that we expect, I don't think anyone rationally thought that a half hour interview was going to solve the problem
of
Biden not seeming to be up to the task of running the country.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but is Biden up to the task of running the country? Then the question is, the binary question there is Trump? And the answer is no.
And well, I think
I think, yeah, the next question, right.
So, it is in terms of one or the other.
If those are your only two options. But if you have a choice of finding an alternative candidate who can...
It's too late.
And how are you going to do
that's
that?
That's the issue. It's
exactly.
Just too late.
It's too late. It's
Rosa
too
Brooks late. Lays it right out. And there is a path to do it. And as Joe said, if we get into September or October, then it's too late.
The path is done.
Then, yeah.
You're set.
Well, so who are some of these, aside from Gavin Newsom... Right. I mean, whose name keeps circulating.
Yeah.
That's not going to go anywhere.
Right.
He's sort of in a different way, but the equivalent to the DeSantis. Like, many people do not want the United States to be California.
Right.
Let's just put
it
out there, right? Like, they didn't want the United States to be Florida. But so who are these other people that they think will galvanize Democrats
That's the thing. I mean, there's Jennifer Whitmer from Michigan. There's Pritzker.
Gretchen Whitmer.
Mm-hmm. There's Pritzker from Illinois. And
no name recognition.
I wouldn't say Pritzker. Who?
Right. I mean,
that's how people
he's
feel.
Another one, but he's got enough money to self-fund and make sure his name is out there. There's Pete Buttigieg, but the country's not ready for a young gay man married with two children to be president of the United States. So there really isn't.
There's
any.
Kamala Harris.
Yeah,
there's also
Kamala
Gina
Harris.
Raimondo, Commerce Secretary, former governor.
Gina Raimondo from Rhode Island.
Is the sad state of affairs that the Democratic Party has no bench? No bench?
No,
no, I don't think that's true.
It does have a bench. It's just that it doesn't have...
It's not ready yet.
It doesn't have a, you know, I don't know what the right word is. It doesn't have the second.
Right.
But, and the other thing is, the person who seems like they have the most chance right now, looking at numbers, looking at everything, is Kamala.
Right.
And what I don't understand is, if Biden becomes... If you're voting for a ticket where you have a president and a vice president... The vice president and a president who you're worried about, you have a vice president who you trust. This whole thing to me seems like a little bit crazy. Part of the reason is because, you know, I'm tempted to create a website called, you know, Leaders at 81 or something like that. This appealed to me. You'll forgive me for getting a little Jewish here, but in the Bible yesterday, we were reading about the rebellion of Korach,
right,
who comes in this Trumpian populist way and says, hey, why are you the leader? We should all be the leaders. And Moses, you know, and God, lots of bad stuff happens to Korach. Mm-hmm. But the really interesting thing about it is Moses was 81 years old when that happened. And then he went on to lead the Jewish people across the Israelite people across the desert for 40 more years. And I've got a list of them. I mean, that's just one that sticks out.
But,
because
no, I think it's...
Because you got this Christian right who are
But I don't think it's... accurate or fair to say, like, every 81-year-old is going to have this set of problems. But it appears that there is a set of problems with this current 81-year-old who happens to be the sitting president of the United States. That's not a minor issue. That's a very major issue. Even if this were 2 years ago and we didn't have a campaign staring us down, that, to me, would be a major issue. This is a job that requires somebody who is absolutely on top of it all the time.
So do we think that Kamala Harris, then, because I said when I opened, right, that I was brave enough to go with Biden knowing that Harris may be the president, right? So what is the holdback that so many people have, then, about Kamala Harris? And it's been something that's been out there since they ran together in the beginning.
Although I think I don't know, it seems to be improving because she has been out more and she has definitely made she's proving herself over these last several weeks of being incredibly loyal and doing the right thing and keeping her head up when they want it to and down when they don't, when they want it to.
Yeah.
But if Biden were to resign, and Kamala becomes president, names a vice president, and then you have your slate.
I can only imagine the media feeding frenzy if that would happen. And while I think Harris would probably be fine in the top spot, the reason why we're in this position that we're in is because Donald Trump has unleashed the underbelly racism that has built this country. He has unleashed the people who felt powerless and didn't vote before because, well, nobody pays attention to me because I'm just some poor white guy, you know, in Appalachia, and nobody wants to pay attention to me. Or I don't want to, like, you know, pick fruit, but I'll be damned if that illegal immigrant is going to pick fruit that ends up on my table. So he's unleashed all of this. And if you have Kamala Harris as a woman and as a woman of color, the vitriol is going to be unfathomable worse than we saw with Obama. It is going to be absolutely horrible. And I worry for her health and well-being. Mm-hmm. Let me just say it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because these people are crazy. And they do not want, it became clear, they do not want a person of color in the White House unless they're serving food. That really is, or running the elevators, or changing the beds. That's it. That's all they want.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And we have that here. I mean, we have that in Albany, too. But, you know, it's just, we just have to be very, very careful about how we move this whole thing forward and recognize the calamity that will happen if Trump is reelected.
But is it, and this is what I struggle with. So it seems to me difficult to say, and I don't disagree in any way, shape, or form. My God, I don't disagree that Trump is abhorrent in just about in every measure. But doesn't that make the stakes all the more higher as to finding somebody who can beat him? And I guess this is the question that was asked during the Stephanopoulos interview. It was the question asked. It's being asked by House Democrats and Senate Democrats who are voicing great concern of saying, is this the best person that we can send forward in the time that we have to beat Donald Trump? And I guess even I'm a little wary of that.
If it was a year ago, it would be a different story, but it's not. And that's the problem.
But don't you think some of these Democrats, the underlying dog whistle here is that they also will not back Kamala Harris?
Yes.
I mean,
I think
that's
part of it.
What's happening, I think, a little bit within the Democratic Party, too, is that they're not seeing their microaggressions and some of their racial biases. I don't want to sound like I'm saying, forget Joe, just go all in on Kamala because he might pass away. But I'm not saying that, right? I don't want to sound like that's what I'm saying. But there could be more unanimity between Democrats to start to promote her, look at her, and really engage in what she thinks about different policies to comfort the American people, and to try to bring the Democratic Party back to some kind of consensus again. Instead, it's sort of like they're also looking through and past her.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's two ways forward for the Democrats if Joe steps aside in the campaign.
Joe Biden.
And let's consider Joe Donahue.
Right.
Yes, Joe Biden, for the record. And one is that Kamala, as vice president, is anointed as the candidate. We do exactly what you said, mm-hmm. Jennifer. The other is this Rosa Brooks, Ted Dinter Smith approach, this blitz primary, and that there's a wide open, positive, dynamic approach to finding the best candidate. She might be the one who emerges from that, and she might not. And if she does, she'll emerge stronger than if she's anointed. So I think those are two really very different approaches. And I think the latter is probably the one that works best for the Democratic Party.
We'll take a break. We'll come back to letters. And here you've heard what the candidates. You hear what the panelists have to say. We'll get to what the people say right after this. Well, the email server's working. I learned that during the break. So let's get to as many letters as we possibly can. Libby, I love you.
Good.
But. Calling out white men who are calling for another white man to step aside so the Democrats have a better chance to hold the White House and state legislature seems a bit misplaced. While white male cis privilege exists, you are assuming an intent that is not there. Many people who are white men and are calling for Biden to step aside support the Democratic policies and a ticket heading by a woman who is a person of color. Then we go to Amy. Boy, am I tired of this. We talk about Biden saving us from Trump, or if Biden losing, then it's his fault for not dropping out. It completely takes accountability away from we, the people. If Biden loses and Trump wins, that is our fault. We shouldn't have to convince people to not vote for fascism. The race shouldn't even be this close in the first place. Biden or not, this is up to us.
Right.
This fixation on Biden's age is Hillary's emails all over again. America needs to do better, but if Trump wins, then we simply deserve him.
You know, Adam Schiff just recently said the same thing. We ought to be winning this race hands down, and we're not. And he was not saying this is just Hillary's emails all over again. He was saying we have a problem at the top of the ticket.
Well, he writes, a key part of the presidency is performative. The president is our leader. I need to be able to see my president as having the mental agility to respond in the moment in order to be capable of leading this nation. I do not see that in Joe Biden any longer. This is a man I have voted for and admired for decades. He will not survive four more years as president. I worry he'll make it through the rigors of 4 months of vigorous campaigning. Then we go to...
I'd just like to point out that that same exact letter could have been read on the air 4 years ago. I remember we were sitting here and hearing almost exactly that. So I just want to remind people.
But we didn't
people,
see it in the way that we saw it in the debate.
I realize that, Joe. But, you know, again, the thing that's being focused on. Understood.
James says the best person most capable of beating Trump, and get ready for this, Libby. I just want you to hold your heart. The best person most capable of beating Trump, both in a debate as well as in the election, was former Governor Andrew Cuomo.
I don't necessarily disagree. I think if Cuomo threw his hat into the ring, it would definitely change all the dynamics, and he would probably win simply because I would love to see him debate Trump, because he would not brook any of Trump's crap. And I'm trying really hard not to say words you can't say on radio.
So this is the...
So I have no doubt. I mean, you know, he was not a nice person, but he was not a nice person until he wasn't.
Well, this is where he was headed, and everybody believed it until the COVID and then the sexual harassment stuff. So, but it's now we're in an age where that isn't something that necessarily turns people away from you now, because we have a new bar.
And we have a sexual predator who's running for office.
A convicted sexual predator.
Well, can I just say something about Andrew? So Andrew Cuomo was one of those people who was on the bench. I was saying before, people are saying it's a weak bench. I don't agree with that, but if he was one of those people. Another one was Joe Kennedy III, who made the mistake of primarying Ed Markey, lost, first Kennedy to lose in Massachusetts. It was a stupendously bad decision and a very poorly run campaign. He's now the special envoy to Northern Ireland and trying to revive himself maybe for 2028. But both of those would have been on the bench and would be part of the conversation now had they not flamed out for their various reasons.
So let me just, I want to finish. I'm being unfair to James's letter, because that was only one line of it about Cuomo. He didn't do anything as bad as Trump, but rather than help him, the Democrats destroyed him. Andrew Cuomo was crisp, sharp, and he had the kind of street-fighting spirit needed to dismantle a fraud like Trump. Unlike Trump, he got us through COVID. As an opponent, he would have been the Republicans' worst nightmare. But unfortunately, the Democrats didn't understand that, and now he's gone. The Democrats did this to themselves. Then we go to this letter from Martha. Oldish white female here with a lesbian sister and a lesbian daughter. My father was gay, too. My cisgender son is a lead organizer with Abortion Action Missouri. My daughter is a social worker for the pediatric gynecology program, working with trans kids in a large Boston hospital. And I'm a paralegal doing immigration work with an Albany law firm. I think she also is running.
I'd vote for her.
Agrees. I agree with Jim Ketterer. Biden is not up for the task and is losing. Biden, when asked about the day after if he loses, said, well, if he did, and this is, there's some debate over this, if he did the goodest job, and then said it was a good job. There is some debate over that on the transcript, which has been corrected by ABC after the White House went to them and said, we believe. It's sort of unintelligible, but if you, so even if you say that, it still is a little weird, but anyway. Said by a fellow who does not understand the impact of this loss, he should have said, I will be devastated because I understand the stakes. He does not. The stakes are too high for all the communities I care about and serve. We can and should do better. Then we go to Maryland. As an RN, I must point out that aging goes in one direction. Biden's reply that he needs more naps and not to soar after 8 p.m. is unacceptable for the president of the United States. He must pass the torch. His denial just increases the appearance of his diminished capacity. This letter from Kristen. As a woman, a committed liberal, and someone who loathes Trump, I'd like to voice my agreement with Jim Ketterer, especially his acknowledgement of the excellent work of Ezra Klein and Olivia Nuzzi.
Nuzzi, yeah.
Yes. It is precisely because I want to protect the rights of women and members of the LGBTQ community that I want a new, more vibrant Democratic candidate to face and defeat Trump. Thank you for all this conversation. Then we go to Kathy. I watched the debate with several Democratic neighbors within minutes. We were all appalled. We cannot erase the images that our eyes saw and our ears heard. I love Joe Biden. He has accomplished so much, but he cannot get reelected. He should be a hero and withdraw. The Democratic Party should be heroic and give the country the different choice that voters have been yearning for. Then we could focus on the question, should our next president be a criminal or the Democratic nominee? One more, and then we'll take a break. Let's go to Ken. Joe must go. Biden, that is. His decline is going to accelerate precipitously. He has been truly a great president, but he will lose in the fall. Wafflers will simply not vote, and we'll have the beast in office once again. We'll take a break. We'll continue. First News with Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, 7 minutes past 10 o'clock on this Monday morning. UAlbany lecturer in Africana Studies Jennifer Burns is here, Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences at RPI, Jim Henler, Jim Ketterer, Senior Fellow at Bard Center for Civic Engagement and Political Consultant and Lobbyist, Libby Post. We welcome your letters, and man, are there a lot of them. So we will go back to those. Karen says, it's so hard to listen. As an 81-year-old myself, it's obvious to most observers that Biden has something terribly wrong, much more than the word forgetfulness and slowing down of my own brain. And as such, he won't win. That's the essential point. Yes, democracy is on the line, and to my mind, it's fail if he continues in the race. Then, let's see, we go to Susan. I'm very disappointed in the lack of allegiance to the president. Would your time not be better spent identifying all Trump's flaws and his lack of mental clarity, all in the spirit of equal time? Well, two things. One, I think the majority of the people on this panel agree with you. Also, I think that wow, we've spent a lot of time talking about Trump's mental flaws.
Mm-hmm.
I would say since 2015.
Yeah, as I said before,
to great criticism.
Criticism. It's not a headline this past.
Well, he's also been radio silent.
None of it's news. None of it is news about Trump. But in terms of allegiance to the president, no, I don't have allegiance to this president or any president. What I have is allegiance to the Constitution. And I have allegiance to the idea that we need somebody who is fully on their game in that position. When I see that Joe Biden is saying that he's defiant, that is exactly the wrong message to send, I think, to the country, and certainly the wrong message to send to me. He should not be defiant. We should not be held hostage to his ego and ambition.
This what is message not that, would you like him to send?
I would like him to send the message that I've done a good job. I've been a good president for the time that I was able to have the wherewithal to do so. I don't any longer, and I need to step aside.
That's the message he should send. So your belief is based 100% on your belief that he can't do it. And anything he says that disagrees with you is going to be called arrogance, is going to be called... I don't see it that way. I mean,
I think using the word defiant and saying only the good Lord... Will remove me from this race.
That's a pretty high bar. That was bar weird.
Unacceptable. 100% unacceptable. That is my position.
But who's the one who picked the word defiant, right? The media is the one who's chosen to use that he's defiant. I know he's resistant, but he's not come out to say, I'm being defiant and I'm going to... So I think there's also that slant on it.
With the realization that we don't know... With the realization that we don't know what, that there is no diagnosis on the table, with that realization, I still don't, I do have two very strong thoughts about this. And one is he, I don't believe you can say the same, I don't believe you can have it both ways. I don't think you can say that he cognitively is diminished. And does not have the decision making skills that are necessary to be president. And then, why is he not realizing that he shouldn't run? I don't know that he can make that decision. I don't know. Maybe he can. And obviously he has made a decision. But is he capable of making the right decision? And I don't know. I really don't know. And I think that's something to say.
Like he sat there, Dan, and said, this is what I'm going to do. I mean, Biden has been surrounded by advisors and by his staff and by people from both sides. And by the way, he has called in people. He had a telecon with some of the WebEx or whatever that was. With some of the leaders, and, you know, some of the congressional people who are calling for him.
A week later. A week later.
Yeah, but he's...
But
how
I'm saying
could
if,
it
the
be?
Cognitive, if the cognitive, right. if the cognition was there, why wouldn't you do it the next day? Okay, my second point, though, before I go to this, my second point is, if it were my father, I would want to protect him. Mm-hmm. I would want him not to go through what he's going through.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not putting any onus on the family, but that often, those are the people who often help in this decision. And they'll make the decision. Apparently, they've made the decision that they feel is right for their loved one. But I look at it as also just extremely, that interview was so sad, so sad. And so I do think that comes into this, that there's also, what's good for democracy? What's good for the country? But what's, you know, this guy, does he deserve this too? And I don't know that that's the case. I'm furious to discover so late, writes Anne, that Biden is unfit to serve another term. If he's on the ticket in November, I'll vote for him, but I will never forgive the Democratic Party. They have one job in mind, and that's to put forth candidates I can feel good about voting for. I've also just discovered that they are as broken as the Republican Party.
As it's, morally broken?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a really good point.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not voting for Dad. We're voting for President of the United States. And so feeling good about voting for somebody, I understand the sentiment, but there are plenty of times when I think we've all had to hold our nose because it's about what the long-term impact of one particular office will be. You know, I held my nose voting for Andrew Cuomo, but I did it because the alternatives would have been worse. And that's what we need to look at here. What's the alternative? We can all wring our hands about Joe Biden and his mental capacity and all the rest of this stuff. But the fact of the matter is we have to rally around one person. The notion of, oh, let's do a series of primaries at this late date, it's July, we've got 4 months, is absurd. And we need to just keep our eye on the prize, and that's keeping the White House. Otherwise, gee, Project 2025 also wants to cut all the funding for NPR and the humanities.
Jim writes, why is nobody talking about Bobby Kennedy Jr.? Some surveys show that if nominated the Democrats, he would defeat Trump. In today's crazy world, people of goodwill have to stick together.
No.
All right.
But
Jim, I think our jury has spoken.
But let me say, for what it's worth, there is nothing in any polling that when you put Kennedy against Trump, he does well.
No.
Kennedy is not well.
He's a joke.
But will he? Could he do well enough if Biden stays in the race, and if there are people waffling and deciding not to vote for Biden, could this mean that Kennedy could siphon off more votes?
No, he's going to siphon off votes from Trump.
Actually, at the moment, it looks like it does seem so. But Trump.
Paul writes two words: Bernie Sanders. Bernie could demolish Trump in a debate and mobilize the Democrats. He also certainly could put that age thing to rest.
Of course he could. I was just wondering about that.
Lisa says, have you finished sabotaging the Democratic frontrunner yet?
Thank you.
Biden is not stepping down. If he loses to the cabal, it will be in no small part due to your efforts. Not everyone, but majority. One thing Democrats are good at is shooting off their own feet. Well, I think you could put that on both schools of thought, right?
I think that wherever any of us in this room stand on it, having a serious conversation about these serious questions is not sabotaging. We're asking hard questions because they need to be asked. I mean, in addition to being the candidate, Joe Biden is the sitting president. We have to wonder, does he have the cognitive capacity to continue to execute this job? If he does, okay, let's see it. If he doesn't, serious decisions have to be made. So we're just asking about it.
So what have you seen in the past few months in Biden's actual running of this country that you would say causes you to doubt things? Let me just point out that he helped get through Congress the aid package for a number of our allies, including a major Ukrainian aid package, which was being opposed by very, very visible, loud Republicans like Marjorie Taylor Greene. He's continued to fund. There was just a large. Sorry, if you're geeky, then you happen to know that what he's been doing in microelectronics in terms of bringing chip manufacturing back to the U.S., you know what he's been doing in some of the medical care stuff he's been investing in that's been new ways of doing. You say, let's see some evidence that he can carry out the job. He's carrying out the job, and he's actually doing a damn good job of it. And what he's not doing a damn good job of is getting out there in front of people, in front of cameras, and saying, hey, I look vigorous and young.
Why?
Well, that's part of the job. Number one,
I'm not convinced that sitting out in front of the camera and
running,
saying I'm vigorous.
That's running for office.
No.
That's part of that.
Communicating
job.
To the American people and to the world is part of the job.
And
that's number one. And number two, I don't deny that he's done a good job up to this point. I just don't. It's not that he just kind of had a few flubs or he misspoke during that debate. This was a long period of very concerning behavior, which has now been shown to have further evidence with deep reporting. And there have been people raising the red flag before about this. So I don't deny anything that you say, Jim. All those things happened. They're good. They're for the better. But that doesn't mean going forward, he's up to the task. Those are two different things.
Why the debate was a week ago this past Thursday. So it's been 10, almost 11 days. So why did it take so long for he had an immediate event the next day. Then virtually nothing. virtually nothing. All scripted events. And even the events that took place that were private fundraisers, he would speak for only 5 or 6 minutes. He wouldn't take questions. He would leave immediately. And he had a teleprompter in people's living rooms. Many have said that is a change, and so there is an allowance that's being made to try to assist in his campaign style. Jim Clyburn right after the debate said he should go out and do more town halls, and then came back and said, well, maybe he's not good at that anymore. Well, okay. I think, again, you're looking at a very different situation. Time has marched on, and I don't think you can look at one event that happened in 2022 and compare it to what happened at the debate or an event that's happening currently, because the situation changes.
I think the other thing that impacted this was when it happened, right, on the calendar, mm-hmm. because you're going into 4th of July week. And in that week, there are a lot of different events that weren't scheduled. A lot of people on vacation, right? Congress isn't like there. Like, I think that also impacted what events were already pre-scheduled during that after debate period, but also who was available to have these spontaneous comeback conversations.
Right.
Right? So without taking into account the calendar in general, I think that played a part. I think that has a role in it.
Which brings up a huge question of why did the Biden team want this debate in the first place?
Yeah, well, there is that.
Let's not go.
I mean, yeah. They're the ones who pushed it. They pushed it. They pushed the timing of it. They wanted it at that date. They wanted it in that venue.
There was a time that he came out, and I can't remember exactly when it was in the last few days, after the immunity decision from the Supreme Court, Biden came out and gave a statement in front of the White House press corps. He then turned around and walked out of the room.
Right.
That was a great moment to say, I'll now take some questions. I'll take 20 minutes of questions. I'll take a half an hour of questions. I'll take 45 minutes of questions. He didn't do any of that. And so he had the people gathered there. He had people who were wanting to ask questions. These are the people who are paid professionals to ask just those sorts of questions. And that didn't happen at all.
Well, and that's right. I mean, that's the week and a half that you lose. I mean, there was mm-hmm. you brought it up to Friday where he did the event in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. then went to Camp David, and then on Sunday was back in Philadelphia. Okay, we'll bring the letters down to the bottom of the hour here. Biden should drop out, says Jerry. We vote for a leader on their speech delivery skills as much as policy. Biden cannot deliver. Independents will not vote for him anymore. Who is better than a woman to defend women's rights? Harris will win. Nestor says, Libby, as a gay man, though yes, white too, I totally disagree with you. Everyone wants Trump to lose, but the question is how best to ensure that. I think sticking with Biden is a mistake. Maureen says it's crystal clear from the debate that Biden has had a distinct cognitive decline and is unfit to continue to serve as president. He did a great job, but it's up. It's time to go. The only logical solution is to turn the position over to Kamala Harris as soon as possible and find a strong VP. My primary concern is that she did not do well when she first ran for president, but I'm hoping under the circumstances, enough women, independents, and people who are just petrified of another Trump presidency will come out for her. Should point out, too, that Biden ran for three times for president before. Mm-hmm. You know,
I
just because you have a failed presidential attempt doesn't mean you're not fit for it. Mm-hmm. I'm Team Ketterer.
Uh-oh.
Says Lisa. I agree and think that Kamala Harris could engage younger American voters. And to Libby's concerns, Harris shares Biden's policies and values.
I know she does. I'm not saying that.
So,
it's just the electability factor this late in the game and what the Trump people will throw at her.
It'll be a birther movement It's already started.
If you saw that clip where over
he
this
said
past weekend,
he was vile.
Absolutely vile. Every dog whistle, everything he had, he's throwing, he'll throw.
I mean, I agree with you, but no matter who you, I mean, Biden or anybody else, you're going to get that from Trump, right?
I just don't think people will pick up on it or be offended when Trump does it.
Right.
Kamala Harris.
Right.
Fair point.
Which is what I was trying
unfortunately.
To, the point right. I was just, trying to make previously.
Mm-hmm.
Ricky says, President Biden told George Stephanopoulos that he had not watched his debate with President Trump. Maybe he should. Maybe he should watch it so he can see how pathetic he was and why so many of us want him replaced as soon as possible. Mike writes, Joe Biden is the worst possible option for the Democratic Party to run in the upcoming presidential election. Replacing Biden would allow the Democratic Party to, quote unquote, reset and craft a positive message around actual policy in the lead up to November. This is a straightforward approach that happens to work. If the stakes are so apocalyptic, why would one continue to back the weakest possible option? Cheryl says, okay, Trump impeached twice. Republicans stuck by him. Trump convicted of sexual assault and defamation. Republicans stuck by him. Trump indicted 34 times. Republicans stuck by him. Biden, a 90-minute bad night. Democrats refuse to rally around him. All right. Jim is clapping. Linda says, stop bashing Biden. You're playing into Trump's hands.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I think Trump is also so quiet, except for his vileness.
Yeah,
because he's letting the Democrat. Right.
Yeah. How asking these questions, how are we bashing Biden? Biden is a public servant. He has an obligation to live up to the office. This isn't bashing. This is questioning and saying, is this the right person, both politically to go forward in the campaign and in terms of being the chief executive at this moment? That I don't see that as bashing, and our job here is not to, you know, pass some kind of loyalty test.
I agree with you. I just think beyond us who can do that and think about it, that there's other outlets and people who are not doing that. They are bashing. They are running with, you know, an overwhelmingly negative take on things. So it's not every actor that's involved in it, but some really powerful ones in positions who have a huge global audience. And it brings me to the other question about, you know, about their concerns. A lot of the dialogue is about domestic matters, but it's not really focused on how he'll do with NATO, the NATO summit coming up, and global events that are changing and currently underway. And I don't know if it's because many Americans tend to just stay at home
or understand.
If it's because they don't understand or they don't know a lot, myself too, about all the intricacies in all the different nations in wars and economic crisis and health concerns and all of trade that's happening right now, right? The conversation's largely centered on within our own country rather than who will be that leader that's looking at global bonds, connections, allyships, and challenges.
90 seconds, three letters. We go to Jordan. I believe that President Biden should step down if he were to do so and put his support behind almost any younger and more literate candidate. Undecided and nervous voters would quickly be very excited about that candidate. Libby's comments regarding President Biden and Democrats, I could not possibly agree more with Libby's comments. While I'm also concerned about President Biden's ability to serve out a second term, the alternative is scary. Democrats need to be a united force. And then we go to this letter from Eric. Biden and his handlers put us in this position. If he doesn't withdraw, I'm writing to Gretchen Whitmer, writing in Gretchen Whitmer, my vote for president in Massachusetts doesn't count anyway. And I'm tired of that, too, said Eric. So there.
Well, that's because everybody votes Democratic in Massachusetts. So it's not like his vote doesn't count. Just think if everybody in Massachusetts decided they wanted Bill Weld back. I mean, then people would be voting differently. But it's a blue state.
That's a very good answer, Lee.
Thank God.
All right. We'll take a break and be right back. Oh, you think we got problems? Let's talk about France. Well, the French election yields deadlocks as the left surges and the far right comes up short. This is a story that we've been talking about on this program over the last 2 weeks. France faced a hung parliament and deep political uncertainty after the three main political groups of the left, center, and right emerged from snap legislative elections on Sunday with large shares of the vote, but nothing approaching an absolute majority. The preliminary results upended widespread predictions of a clear victory for the National Rally, Marine Le Pen's anti-immigrant party that dominated the first round of voting a week ago. Instead, the left-wing New Popular Front won 178 seats. The centrist coalition of President Emmanuel Macron, who cast the country into turmoil a month ago by calling the election, was in second place with 150 seats. Trailing it was the National Rally and its allies, which took 142 seats. The results were compiled by the New York Times using data from the Interior Ministry, and they confirmed earlier projections showing that no single party or bloc would win a majority. The details of the outcome may still shift, but it is clear that to a remarkable degree, a scramble by centrists and the left to form a Republican front to confront the National Rally in the second round of voting worked. Candidates across France dropped out of three-way races and called for unity against Ms. Le Pen's party.
Go ahead. I was just going to say that coupled with the Labour Party winning in Great Britain is a very strong message that the world community, our allies, right? Our staunch allies, Great Britain and France, are not falling prey to the type of fascist politics that Project 2025, the Heritage Foundation, Donald Trump, although I don't think he quite understands it all. He just wants the power. You know, they're not falling prey to this. And if they had, if the conservatives and the fascists had won in those countries, in Great Britain and France, we would be in a world of hurt because fascism would start marching its way across Europe.
So, you know, what I found interesting is, and again, it's a multiple party system and that changes a lot of things. But again, they very quickly on the left, after the scare, said, we're going to figure out what we're going to do and we're going to do it and we're going to move fast and we're going to make it happen. And what they realized is the only way they could defeat Le Pen was by creating this national party they did. And people were willing to step down. People were willing to get behind it. Now put that in the context of the conversation we just had, right? I mean, it's a very different world. And again, having that third party didn't made a big difference. But, you know, people really rallied because they saw the danger of the alternative. And, you know, I sit here in the same 10 days that we've been talking about Biden, they were able to turn around an entire election because they understood the threat.
That's right. That's right.
And which is exactly what Rosa Brooks is asking for.
But it's a little different the way it works there than here.
Yeah, I don't think that's true.
Right. It's a little different.
Yeah, because here it would have to be within the Democratic Party, which is demonstrating already that it's too divided to come to a consensus.
But also here it would have to happen within the Electoral College.
Right.
It would have to happen with 50 states approving the voting.
Yeah.
The only way it could happen is an open convention. I don't see how you could do that with a primary.
Right.
Other Jim?
The other Jim, yes, long been known as the other Jim. Yeah, interesting. I mean, Libby, you so rightly put it also in the context of what's happened in the UK. One place that's not our ally but has had also interesting election results is in Iran. Where we've seen now to call someone a reformer in Iran and in the current constraints of Iranian politics, you know, isn't necessarily the kind of reformer that we might hope for and that many Iranian people are hoping for. But still, it's a move in an interesting direction, and that he was even allowed to run, much less win, is fascinating. Yeah, I mean the landscape in France is a fascinating system. I mean, there's this Fifth Republic that was put in a place, I think, in 1958. The way that it works is going to leave Macron in a really interesting position to try to figure out how to balance off the left, and particularly the leader of the left, who he apparently does not get along with at all. Mélenchon, Macron, these two are oil and water, but at the same time, they have to find a way to work together. Still, and the right is defeated, but two things happened on the right that I think, you know, bear us paying attention to going forward. One is the rise of a new, young, dynamic leader, mm-hmm. and this may be the end of Marine Le Pen and, you know, the real rise of Jordan Bardella on the right. And secondly, though they lost, they won 50 more seats than they had won in the past. So, you know, it's not a complete slam dunk total victory in a way that we can all just say, all right, that's dealt with, let's move on. This, I think they continue to be a force to be dealt with going forward. And, you know, there's the possibility, I guess, that Macron will put in a caretaker government, keep the current prime minister in place, to get through the Olympics.
He said no to his resignation this morning.
Yeah,
That hit the news.
Right, mm-hmm. right. So, and, you know, this tenuous coalition with the left, you know, may just be sent completely ballistic by this. Mm-hmm. It will be interesting to see their reaction to that decision this morning. So I think there's still a lot to be written in this drama in France.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Final thoughts on anything? Anybody else want to get in?
Well, I think, and I think Jim, the other Jim Hendler, will.
The other Jim?
The other Jim will probably agree with me. I'm glad that the left party won in France and that Le Pen didn't. But I am concerned by.
How Le Pen did.
Right. The overt anti-Semitism that
right.
is then going to happen, and I'm concerned about what it's like for Jews in France. It's not a friendly place. I mean, when we were in Paris, we were there for the attacks. But before the attacks happened, we went to the Jewish
well,
museum.
You were there while the attacks took place.
Well, we were there that night.
You were not there for the attacks.
No, right. But we went to the Jewish museum in Paris. And it was the only time I saw armed guards or army folks guarding an institution. And getting in was not easy. It was like airport security. And so they know that the Jewish community is going to be threatened by this as well. So I'm concerned about that.
You mean on the statements from the left?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's and France has never been the most welcoming for Jews, period.
Yeah.
So.
All right. We're going to call it there. Thank you very much for being with us. That was a very good, lively, and respectful chat. I thank you very much. I don't know when we'll stop talking about it. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But we welcome you to be a part of the conversation, as always. We'll be back right after this.